King David. Why do I say that? We talked about last week. See, God is really about King David. How is he doing that? How is he going to really establish the deed?
Oh, he set up his king.
Okay. And?
What'd you say, Floyd?
He set him up as king.
This is justice and righteousness for all.
It's God's covenant with David.
Kingdom will be made forever.
There we go.
Oh.
That's how we really... It's pretty difficult. I don't ask difficult questions. I just read the text back and told you guys over and over again. That's the big point. He will have somebody a descendant of his on the throne forever. So he is really established. That's what I mean by that.
Okay,
that's the key thing. Everything has come from God, yes, and that's true in our lives. But God, has a plan. Now, David had absolutely no idea that this is what God's plan was from the very beginning, okay? Because when was David chosen to be king?
14 years earlier.
Yeah, okay. But when was he really chosen?
Before the foundation
of the world, okay? So God's going to be working out his plan, and David is clued into his plan now at roughly 30 plus years old. Okay, and now God revealed to him that now you're going to be king, and I think he was like 13 or 17, and then what, 13 years later he actually becomes king, and then another 7 years later he becomes the actual king of entire Israel. And now he's going to establish his kingdom forever. Someone from his line, his descendant, will be on the throne forever. And of course, how would God fulfill that? Because what happened in history after David? His descendants didn't do too well, did they? Yeah. How is God keeping that promise? That someone from his line, through Jesus Christ, will be on the throne forever. And that's the reason why that there will be a new heaven and a new earth and a new Jerusalem, and that's where the Jesus Christ will rule, and that the fulfillment, continued fulfillment of that promise. So he's walking with God. He's been tested and he's come through. He's had ups and downs. A normal human being, and now he's going to be triumphant. So, chapter 8, Marie.
After this, David defeated the Philistines and subdued them. And David took Methegamah out of the hand of the Philistines. And he defeated Moab, and he measured them with a line, making them lie down on the ground. Two lines he measured to be put to death, and one whole line to be spared. And the Moabites became servants to David and brought tribute. David also defeated Hadadezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah, as he went to restore his power at the river Euphrates. And David took from him 1,700 horsemen and 20,000 foot soldiers. And David hamstrung all the chariot horses, but left enough for 100 chariots. And when the Syrians of Damascus came to help Hadadezer, king of Zobah, David struck down 22,000 men of the Syrians. Then David put garrisons in Aram of Damascus, and the Syrians became servants to David and brought tribute. And the Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. And David took the shields of gold that were carried by the servants of Hadadezer and brought them to Jerusalem. And from Beta and from Barathai, cities of Hadadezer, king of David took very much bronze. When Toi, king of Hamath, heard that David had defeated the whole army of Hadadezer, Toi sent his son Joram to King David to ask about his health and to bless him, because he had fought against Hadadezer and defeated him. For Hadadezer had often been at war with Toi, and Joram brought with him articles of silver, of gold, and of bronze. These also King David dedicated to the Lord, together with the silver and gold that he dedicated from all the nations he subdued, from Edom, Moab, the Ammonites, the Philistines, Amalek, and from the spoil of Hadadezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah. And David made a name for himself when he returned from striking down 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. Then he put garrisons in Edom. Throughout all Edom he put garrisons. And all the Edomites became David's servants. And the Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. So David reigned over all Israel, and David administered justice and equity to all his people. Joab the son of Zeruiah was over the army, and Jehoshaphat the son of Ahilud was recorder, and Zadok the son of Ahitub and Ahimelech the son of Abiathar were priests, and Seraiah was secretary, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada was over the Cherethites and the Pelethites, and David's sons were priests.
Wow.
Now I know why Carol's eyes hurt today. She looked it over first.
See, I'm not coming here. I don't want to read. I didn't get that. Can you do it again?
Huh?
I'm joking. I didn't get that. So what are your thoughts on that chapter?
He destroyed a lot of soldiers to where there's no one that can fight back.
Okay.
He accumulated a lot of bronze and gold and silver.
He dedicated it to the Lord. His heart was generous toward the Lord.
Anything else?
I just think it's interesting that there's a lot of information on how many people they fought against, but it doesn't seem how many Israelites are fighting, because, you know, God gave them the victory, so I don't know. That's a lot of people.
So what's God doing here?
He's building a peaceful nation for Israel to dwell in, because the enemies will no longer be able to attack.
You had enemies all around. Why were the enemies all around?
Let me go back to the sovereignty of God.
Sovereignty of God, yeah. What else? Don't factor God in the equation. Why were there enemies around? The failures of King Saul. This would have been Saul's job. He wanted to establish his throne. He would have should have taken, remember, all the things that, what was that, the Amalekites, is that right? That remember correctly? He was told to destroy.
The ones that he didn't destroy.
Yeah, he didn't. Because he would have established, God said, Saul's throne. And, you know, it is the same way today. What's God doing today with Israel? He's established them in 1948. How is he preserving them? Because God's preserving Israel. How is he doing that today? As of right now.
Well, they have a lot of allies.
But they have really one big ally. The most powerful nation in the world right now. And you're not going to mess with us. And if they're our ally, take on them. I mean, even with the Palestinians in our country, the anti-Semitism and so on, even a liberal, I mean, getting more progressive and liberal than the current White House, they're standing with Israel. Big time. And why are they doing that? Like, that's the sovereignty of God, because we have inflation, and we are protecting them. Israel exists in large part, obviously God, but through the United States. So God is maintaining them, preserving them. He is establishing David's kingdom. David is doing what Saul did not do. Okay? And you just see, again, the contrast between David and Saul. What's the difference? What are some of the differences? Think back to Saul and what we just read.
Saul wasted a lot of time looking for David instead of going out getting after the enemies of Israel. He was too busy with that guy, with one person.
And I don't think he would have been successful in that. Why? If he'd stopped pursuing David, David was just hidden in the caves or whatever, and he tried to expand his kingdom, would he have been successful?
Not when people sing David. And Saul has slain his thousands, and David has slain his 10,000s.
So what'd you say?
God removed his blessing.
Yep, the Lord was not with him. Why is David successful here? The Lord was with him. The Lord was with him. And the Lord's with him to do what? And this is where it gets difficult for us. We don't understand this culture. What's difficult to read about the Lord being with him? What's happening?
There's an element in killing.
Yeah. And that's what has to happen in God's plan for this nation. Because what's God going to do eventually through David? This kingdom is going to be under David, the installment is going to be the largest it's ever been in its history. And it's going to be a symbol of what? A spiritual picture of whose future kingdom? Yeah. Jesus. And he comes in. Where is he going to reign? Just remember this 2 weeks ago. Where is Jesus going to reign? In eternal state. In Jerusalem. Okay. Fulfilling the promise, the covenant he made with him. And so it's a literal fulfillment at this time in history, but it's also a future picture. And so you have this blessing that's coming through David, and he is a type of Christ. And you know, Jesus was so successful in ministry and God was with him. And he, in one sense, his ministry flourished. And this is the same thing with David. He's got a heart full. What else is God doing in this? Someone already mentioned it, but I think I see something else in here. Because we just read it in chapter 7, and now we start to see the fulfillment of it in chapter 8. If you guys can pick up on this. What's the thing that David wanted to do in chapter 7?
Build a temple or a house for God.
Now, what do we see in chapter 8?
The collection of.
There we go.
I was just saying that the price on the way down, when he starts collecting the gold and the silver and the bronze,
setting aside.
How much gold was there in the temple? Do you remember? Or any idea?
It was a lot.
Well, it was. I think it was lined with gold, if I'm not correct. I may be mistaken on that. But there was enough gold that when it burned down in 70 AD, what happened to the gold?
It went through the bricks.
The stones. And what did the soldiers do?
They took them apart.
They turned over stones to get the gold.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there was a passage I thought you had read in a sermon. regarding the Lord, it might have been in the heaven, or maybe you were talking about the nations bringing wealth to Israel in the end times. And when I was reading this, I was going like, well, there's the first of it coming, an example of what would be coming in the future. You know, for those the nations that don't have, maybe first.
We see the sovereign God here in the Lord helps. Chapter 9, David's kinship with Mephibosheth. I helped you out there.
Mephibosheth.
I said that for you, okay?
No one I remember.
You want to have someone else read so you can make fun of her?
That's okay.
Blonde in the back?
Go ahead. And David said, is there still anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and they called him to David. And the king said to him, are you Ziba? And he said, I am your servant. And the king said, is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him? Ziba said to the king, there is still a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet. The king said to him, where is he? And Ziba said to the king, he is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, at Lodabar. Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, at Lodabar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, Mephibosheth. And he answered, behold, I am your servant. And David said to him, do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. And I will restore to you all the land of Saul your father, and you shall eat at my table always. And he paid homage and said, what is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I? Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, all that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson. And you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall always eat at my table. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. And then Ziba said to the king, according to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so will your servant do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. Now he was lame in both his feet.
Okay, your thoughts there.
Well, David kept his promise to Saul that he wasn't going to continue killing off, or he wasn't going to kill off his line.
Whatever. Yep.
Well, he was totally unaware that there was any descendants and that he had to inquire. So what were they doing? Keeping him hid, keeping him low profile, hoping he wouldn't die or something? I mean, as far as from Mephibosheth's point of view, you know.
Yeah. What would life like to have been for Mephibosheth? Obviously, what was the custom back then?
That was to destroy.
No threat to the line. You'd have to take them out. Right? Mm-hmm. You'd kill them. And we'll get there in the end. But this is what David instructs Solomon, his son, to do. Many wives, many sons. God called Solomon to be king, and so in some of, as we'll get there, some of David's last words are, you need to kill. Mm-hmm. And Bathsheba was there, you need to take out, you need to kill your brother here, and your brother here, and, you know, take these people out, they're a threat to the line. So. Mm-hmm. What do you learn about David in this chapter?
Compassion.
Compassion.
Mercy.
Mercy.
Well, he kept a promise.
Kept a promise. A promise.
He kept his promise.
Promise keeper.
Mm-hmm. And powerful to direct Ziba and his family to tend the fields for the fifth show.
Establish the inheritance.
What?
Establish the inheritance.
Yeah.
But I find it curious because in the beginning it says there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and he. But and then the king tells him that he's going to be a servant to Mephibosheth. And, you know, he's going to tend to the ground and give him everything. And wasn't he already that? Or was...
He's just a servant of Saul.
So now he became a servant of Mephibosheth.
Yeah, and it's, there is still a son of Jonathan who's crippled on both feet.
It's hard to tell what happened to Saul's property, too.
Behold, he is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel in Lodabar. So this is just a servant of Saul. Now, Mephibosheth is in a different place. It's being tended to by this other family.
Oh, so they're not listening.
So he brings him to him, and then he commands him to do that. So... And he showed great kindness to him by letting him eat at his table. Okay.
Yeah, especially for a dead dog such as him.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
Ziba's pretty wealthy too. 20 servants.
Yeah, 15 sons and 20 servants. He had his own a servant having his own servants.
It says Makur, son of Amiel, was a man of wealth. And Lodabar was a city located in Gilead, east of the Jordan. 10 miles south of the Sea of Galilee. That land given to Ziba was substantial, but Ziba, yeah, definitely had a large, we've been blessed by the Lord, so that way.
David also elevated Mephibosheth to a high position in Israel, sitting at his table. Because before he didn't mention that he had any servants to begin with.
Now again, contrast this with what we remember about the behavior of Saul. Would Saul ever do what David did?
No, he looked down on
him. And also, yeah.
He was paranoid about everything.
Paranoid about everything, and he tried to eliminate his enemies. And what is...
Secure.
David is just secure. David wasn't consumed with maintaining his kingdom. Ever had to been so, and even probably unknowingly, try to, you've got something and it's a source of joy, but eventually you just end up trying to maintain it and you rob yourself of the joy of that. I always think of something like this with my father-in-law. He always wanted a, Mazda Miata that they had divorced, and I don't know how many years later it was. Well, a good many years later. And he could never, he struggled to make decisions, he was undecisive. And he's a guy of regret, a woulda, coulda, shoulda type of guy. So we're back, we're in Ohio, Concord, and all of a sudden I hear this scream, and it's my wife, and she's like screaming. She said, "No, but he didn't do that." Well, he pulled up in his Mazda Miata that he just bought, kind of out of a 40-year-old thing. Well, he drove it for a while, and it has set in the garage under the tarp for all these years. And it's like, "Ed, you don't own this thing. This thing owns you." When I was there, I would say, "Ed, you get some air in the tires. Let me take it for a spin." Or, "That's just, Ed, why don't you just sell it then? You know, if I'm going to go to Erica, then we're going to have to give it to the kids then," or whatever. You know, it's just like, he's like, doesn't spend money. And so I was just like jokingly said, he's looking at airplanes. "Yeah, get yourself an airplane." He loves airplanes, works at airfield now just for free, and has a little plane he flies around. And I finally, I just was like jokingly said, "Give me your credit card, I'll spend your money then." Trying to offend him to spend money to get the plane because you only have so much time. And finally, finally got this plane and you know, does his thing. But, you know, it's like, it's the difference between maintaining something versus enjoying something. I think Saul tried to maintain the kingdom. I think David is just enjoying the kingdom. He's secure enough in the Lord that he can sit there and bless his enemy and keep his promise and all that. Okay.
He kind of can relax.
Yeah.
Where Saul couldn't.
Yeah.
Because he could just trust God with it.
Saul's would never grow. There would never be any growth.
And the growth was dependent upon one thing. What was it?
The Lord blessing.
The obedience to the Lord and the blessing of God. Okay. 10 more minutes. Ammon and Aram defeated.
After this, the king of the Ammonites died, and Hanan the son reigned in his place. And David said, "I will deal loyally with Hanan the son of Nahash, as his father dealt loyally with me." So David sent by his servants to console him concerning his father. And David's servants came into the land of the Ammonites. But the princes of the Ammonites said to Hanan their lord, "Do you think because David has sent comforters to you that he is honoring your father? Has not David sent his servants to you to search the city and to spy it out and overthrow it?" So Hanan took David's servants and shaved off half the beard of each and cut off their garments in the middle at their hips and sent them away. When it was told David, he sent to meet them, for the men were greatly ashamed. And the king said, "Remain at Jericho until your beards have grown and then return."
Just stop right there. Oh. So now what's happening here?
Somebody got some bad advice.
Somebody got some bad advice.
And they took it.
And somebody wasn't smart enough to reject it.
What does it tell you about counselors?
Well, in the multitude of this counselors, there wasn't safety.
Right. What would have been the reputation of David around that area now?
Likes to take over kingdoms.
And?
Everybody afraid of him.
Afraid of him? What else?
Well, if he's killing tens of thousands of people, what would make this individual want to want to go to war with him? He would be, his advice would be to, you know, make peace.
Like his father did. But the other thing is, what was the story we just read? And it's there for a reason.
Well, he was fair.
Yeah. But he was also, he brought in his enemy to his inner court. So, I mean, the reason why I bring it up is because that's the story that God has written here before this. So I think his reputation would have been all those things, plus he's a pretty good guy, as well, he's fair. And so there was nothing in here for him, for this, what's his name? Hanan, right? Hanan? He just got bad advice by counselors, okay? And so, that's why I never listen to the elders. in his church. He just doesn't know to do it at all. So.
How's that make you feel?
The guys who think half glass full instead of the people that think the glass, you know what I mean, half empty or whatever.
Now, these counselors, you know who they remind me of? Like when I was reading this?
Yeah, doctors.
Saul.
Mm-hmm.
They're paranoid. They're paranoid. Mm-hmm.
You always have those people that just want to stir up trouble. Have them in the office.
Well, they're paranoid, and they're paranoid because of what? What feeds paranoia?
Fear.
Fear. They're afraid, and you're afraid. You're paranoid, which means you're not thinking correctly. And we logically can reasonably think this through. He's this powerful guy. He's a fair guy. His reputation. He's powerful, and our former leader thought it was good to ally with him, and they just are completely, Okay. Verse 6.
When the Ammonites saw that they had become a stench to David, the Ammonites sent and hired the Syrians of Beth Rehob and the Syrians of Zobah, 20,000 foot soldiers, and the king of Maacah with 1,000 men, and the men of Tob, 12,000 men. And when David heard of it, he sent Joab and all the host of the mighty men. And the Ammonites came and drew up in battle array at the entrance of the gate, and the Syrians of Zobah and of Rehob and the men of Tob and Maacah were by themselves in the open country.
Okay, stop right there. It was a sign of disgrace to shave off part of the head, and they cut them their robes so that their buttocks were exposed, and that was another thing that made them very humiliating for this in this culture at that time. And it was a great humiliation. Now David doesn't just, he's not acting like he did with Nabal. We're seeing growth here in David, right? Remember Nabal? He wouldn't feed him. Pay him basically for the service. And so his immediate response, and he was going to take his life. His men are a greater offense. His men are humiliated to service. He doesn't immediately attack, okay? And now the sons of Ammon saw what they had done, and they built their army. But David sends out Joab and all the army, and says, the mighty men. Now, who are the mighty men?
Okay. Seasoned warriors.
What?
Seasoned warriors, the big guys.
Can you tell me anything about them?
Well, you mentioned before that they would fight lions.
600. Wasn't it all this crazy, the decrepit people, the desperate.
No, yes, they could be part of that group, but do you know who the mighty men were? I don't know off the top of my head the chapter. I'll have to look at it, and maybe we'll go over it next Wednesday. But one man would slay 100 to 300 men.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
yeah. Okay?
They
would have great endurance, that their hands would be paralyzed to the sword. Okay?
Yeah.
They would go down a hill on a snowy day in a pit with lions and just destroy the lions. Okay? These are great men of valor. They were the mighty men. Okay? Seasoned warriors, as Don said, but not just your garden variety seasoned warrior. These guys were, and they were leaders of men as well. So he's sending these guys on top of his army. Okay, and on top of his general, Joab. Yeah, so it's like, you ticked me off? You want a war? Okay. Verse 9.
When Joab saw that the battle was set against him both in front and in the rear, he chose some of the best men of Israel and arrayed them against the Syrians. The rest of his men he put in the charge of Abishai, his brother.
Abishai, he was one of the mighty men.
Abishai, his brother. And he arrayed them against the Ammonites. And he said, if the Syrians are too strong for me, then you shall help me. But if the Ammonites are too strong for you, then I will come and help you. Be of good courage, and let us be courageous for our people and for the cities of our God. And may the Lord do what seems good to him. So Joab and the people who were with him drew near to battle the Syrians, and they fled before him. And when the Ammonites saw that the Syrians fled, they likewise fled before Abishai and entered the city. Then Joab returned from fighting against the Ammonites and came to Jerusalem. But when the Syrians saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they gathered themselves together. And Hadadezer sent and brought out the Syrians who were beyond the Euphrates. They came to Helam with Shobak, the commander of the army of Hadadezer, at their head. And when it was told David, he gathered all Israel together and crossed the Jordan and came to Helam. The Syrians arrayed themselves against David and fought with him. And the Syrians fled before Israel. And David killed of the Syrians the men of 700 chariots and 40,000 horsemen, and wounded Shobak, the commander of their army, so that he died there. And when all the kings who were servants of Hadadezer saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they made peace with Israel and became subject to them. So the Syrians were afraid to save the Ammonites anymore.
Okay. Two thoughts?
More soldiers that are not able to defend the Arameans. So basically, mm-hmm. he wiped their ability to come back at him and fight him.
This was not them attacking and gaining security. This was an unjust war, and the people felt, the army felt like, you know, God's blessing would then be upon them, and that's exactly what happened for sure. Anything else?
Well, Hadadezer, or whatever, didn't stay defeated because he defeated him once and he came back.
Yeah.
The Syrians.
But once again, we see the sovereignty of God in his hand and in this.
He expanded my territory too, it looks like.
Yeah. And the men of 700 chariots. How many men are there?
700 chariots, and you know,
how many men are there?
Now, what would be what's more significant, a chariot or the horse?
The horsemen, because
no, it's a chariot.
The chariot.
The chariot, because they don't have as many of those, and they'd be more like a tank. Mm-hmm. Okay, as opposed to just an average horseman would be someone that would be like just your average kind of army man. You'd be on a horse. You've seen the
Spartacus.
Yeah.
Little knives out.
Yeah, that. But you also have, like, in the Revolutionary War, you had the soldiers and the stupidity of just standing and firing, you know, it's an honorable way to fight. Then they would come by with the dragoons, those in the cavalry, and slice them open and so on. But then the other thing was that you had someone in a chariot, was even harder to take down, which is why they only had so many of them, but that was a significant number. So in our chariots, and then all those horsemen, and
but don't you have to have fairly level ground to have chariots? Otherwise, you're tipping. I mean, I think of it being unstable.
Sure, you do, but at the same time, they're going to go to valleys or flat areas to do battle. They don't.
And I guess I can't visualize how big some probably these valleys are. The roads they probably got through.
And you'd say Mount Olives, when I showed that picture in a sermon, it's not like
Rainier,
or even Cascades.
It's like the Smokies.
Our mountains,
Because when I went, God, Lord, are you taking Moses up to this mountain and this and that? And like, well, what was a mountain, a real mountain? Like, he's not climbing Everest, folks.
It's a big hill.
Compared to ours. So.
40,000 horses.
Yeah. But through this bad advice, through all those counselors, what was the result?
Destruction.
And then they became servants to Israel. Okay. And then the other thing, giving them the Arameans fear to help the sons of Ammon. That?
Yep.
All that is given to David.
You're on your own.
By God.
Yeah.
And so he is being blessed, he's being obedient, and he's about to commit his greatest sin. he's going to take on another wife. You don't need to do that, dude.
He's doing against himself.
Right? You don't glutton for punishment, dude.
Yeah, right.
Hey, man, you forgot to take the sheep out.
It's your turn, Jeff.
You lay your ropes everywhere. It's a dirty little laundry basket. Can't you put it in there?
Well, he doesn't really have to listen to that because he would just go to the next wife.
Right.
I'm sure the wives all either had their own individual house or, yeah,
they attacked you. Are you kidding me? He had the little corner apartment. That's what he had. They had everything else. And then the kids.
The band cave was a cave.
Yeah.
Right?
Go be alone.
Solomon was worse.
It's time to put the kids to bed. It's your job tonight, David. I got 30 kids to put to bed.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh. Give me another file class. That's why you ain't got all those servants.
That's right. God is blessing David. So, any final thoughts, questions? Okay, let's pray. Lord, we thank you for tonight. And we just reminded of a different time. And you're the same God. That if we walk with you, obey your commands, we will be blessed. And be blessed in just a variety of ways. Ways that we would expect and ways that we would not expect. Lord, make us like David in the regard of being a merciful, compassionate, promise-keeping man. Lord, bless, continue to bless us the rest of this day and weeks and months and years that you've assigned for us. I just pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.